Ich bin so frei. Der Podcast, in dem es um Freiheit, Frauen und ums Anpacken geht. Mit Dr. Zoe von Fink.
Welcome to the podcast on women, freedom and how to shape our future. The title Ich bin so frei means in German something like I'm taking the liberty. So today I'm taking the liberty to present a female voice from Ukraine. Halina Yanchenko is a member of the Ukrainian parliament. Before joining parliament in 2019, she was the head of an NGO focusing on anti-corruption. We discuss how democracy is still very much alive and kicking in Ukraine, even when the country is at war. Halina talks about her two children, who are currently refugees abroad, and what she expects from partners. I learn that 17% of women have joined the Ukrainian military, many of them fighting on the front line. In the interview, Halina mentions an NGO that she has founded that helps refugees to find housing. You can find more information on that in the show notes. We recorded the interview on June 6th. The day before, Kiev, the capital where she lives, was attacked again. The unthinkable has happened. We have a war in the middle of Europe. It often makes me feel helpless. But the very least I can do is to let you hear a female voice fighting for peace and freedom. Good morning, Halina. How are you and where are you?
I'm in Kyiv. Kyiv was bombed just 2 days ago. So we are here in a still quite a tense situation. And the thing is that any kind of attack can happen anytime at any city. It doesn't matter where you are, in the east of Ukraine, where the active military activities are taking place, in the capital city, or somewhere far in the west of Ukraine, near the border with Poland, like in Lviv or any other city. So Russians keep attacking Ukrainian cities. They have changed their strategy quite some time ago. So now they do have some tense military activities in the east and partly in the south of our country. But they keep basically terrorizing, keeping people in terror for the rest of the country, basically. And it makes me desperate, the fact that many of our Western allies could actually help Ukraine and could speed up the end of this war by providing Ukraine sufficient amount of the anti-air defense that could save more lives and could actually stop this terror that Russia has started in Russia. While I'm talking about Western allies, I mean Germany as well, and I mean Germany first of all. I have many reasons for that.
Let me send you my really heartfelt sympathy. I really feel with you. Also, the German people are really full of solidarity with your situation. I really feel you. Maybe we can just go one step back and you explain, who are you? You are a member of parliament.
Yeah, I am a member of parliament. I am a deputy head of parliamentary majority. Back to the couple months ago, I was in charge of investment, engagement and investment protection in Ukraine, being Secretary of National Investment Council of Ukraine, which is advisory body to President. These are my professional statuses, but I also have a human status. I am a person and mother of two children who are 5 and 10 years old. And my children are refugees nowadays. And it totally breaks my heart that my children are forced to live somewhere else and that I can't spend, you know, my nights with them. I can't read a fairy tale to them. I can't help them to do their homework or have a walk in a park on a weekend. I think that Ukrainians don't deserve that. And Ukrainian children don't deserve to be separated from their parents. Ukrainian children don't deserve to, those who stayed in Ukraine, they don't deserve, you know, to hear air alarm or hear explosions or see the dead bodies of their neighbors if shelling happens somewhere near. Yeah, I do have some professional statuses and professional like work that I do in Ukraine. But first of all, I'm a human, I'm a European, I'm a mother. And I want you to understand it really, really clear that we are Europeans. We are, you know, just humans, just like you, having families, having our works, having our plans and dreams. But all of those plans and dreams were ruined on February 24th. And it's very important that you understand that you feel solidarity, but you actually act like you have the solidarity.
I mean, we certainly feel the solidarity, and I really feel with you. So you have decided for yourself that it's safer to have your children outside of the country.
Yeah, I was forced to send them out in early March, when it was clear that basically everyone is under danger. And given the fact that Russians keep, you know, throwing these cruise missiles and attacking the cities from the long range, with the long range rockets and missiles, for right now, I decided that my children should stay abroad, and then I can devote myself totally 24/7 to help in Ukraine and to speed up the victory.
I mean, this is probably just from our perspective, but when we read in Germany and also the UK, US media about the war, we certainly hear a lot or read a lot about men, but not so much about the women. And I'm so sure there's so many brave women like you out there. Why do you think is the media coverage this way?
I don't know. I'm not sure that this is something that makes me worry the most. Because when you are under danger, your physical survival, the survival of your whole, you know, society makes you worry the most. But I should tell you that so nowadays, no matter who you are, a man or a woman, everyone participates. According to the opinion poll, Ukrainian opinion poll that I went through, I think in March or April, it said that 80% of Ukrainians somehow participate or act on a daily basis to help Ukraine. So some people joined army. And by the way, there are about 17% of women who now serve in army, and those women are also in the front line. Someone joined territory defense, someone volunteer. A lot of women became leaders in the volunteer movement, like helping to get some humanitarian assistance or to sort it out or to organize logistics, how to provide this or how to actually ship this humanitarian assistance. A lot of women participated in evacuation of civilians, like my friends and my colleagues who are members of Ukrainian parliament and who have some constituencies. They were risking their lives but helping civilians from their constituency to evacuate. Sometimes they were the girls who were driving the cars with civilians. But I should say that war does not make a difference between sexes. It does not make a difference between ages. Everyone suffer. Everyone can be killed or can be captured by Russian soldiers and then tortured or go through sexual violences. We've seen a lot of this evidence, more than enough, in the liberated territories. And we have a lot of evidences that are totally unacceptable nowadays on the European continent.
So moving on to another subject about your strong democracy, I read a lot about that your parliament is still functioning very well. So I was wondering, I mean, how do you keep a parliament running when you're at war, and how do you keep a country democratic when you're at war? How does it function in practice? I mean, do you meet online or how do you do it?
Now we gather physically in the building of parliament once in a while. Sometimes it's every week, sometimes it's every other week. But we understand that our country is a parliamentary presidential country. So parliament has a lot of responsibility, but also there are procedures or there are some decisions that can be taken by parliament only. That's why we feel this responsibility and we keep working. So we gather physically in the building of the parliament in Kyiv, in downtown of Kyiv. Answering another question of yours, how we keep our country democratic, Well, this is a part of our DNA, of Ukrainians' DNA. For the 30 years of independence, we've been making this choice and basically proving that this is our civilization choice, that we are a democratic country. And by the way, I should tell you that Ukrainians love to criticize their government. They love to criticize their politicians. This is a part of culture. But nowadays, the whole country is so united that the support, the overall support of president, for example, is over 93 or 95%, which is absolutely, I don't even know, like what word to find to describe it. This is amazing, enormous, but nevertheless, we keep those democratic practices because we know that was a choice of society, a choice of people who are also on the front lines and who are protecting our country with arms in their hands and who are risking their lives. We can't like do anything to disappoint them. We don't have a right to disappoint them. Everyone should do their work as good as we can.
Talking about your work, I mean, you're known for your anti-corruption work. I know it's certainly not a priority, but also thinking in the long term or in the midterm about EU accession, where do you see possible areas for setbacks caused by the war? Or how do you keep this kind of work up, if at all?
Well, currently the priorities have changed totally. So currently I do much more work which is related to diplomatic work and information related work. But also I have a big initiative for refugees. So basically I came up with an initiative which helps refugees to find free of charge shelters, homes, both in Ukraine and abroad. This initiative is called Shelter in English. In Ukrainian, it's Prihistok. And it's a website with announcement on the free of charge shelters. We have over, I think, 13 or 15,000 announcements of, you know, just people, just citizens who are ready to shelter some Ukrainian refugees in Ukraine and abroad. So these became my priorities. Everything have changed after February 24th, unfortunately. But I really dream of the day when I can go back to the topics or to the, you know, to the, yeah, pretty much to the topics that I worked on as a member of parliament before the war. It's, well, basically anti-corruption, which is in Ukraine, it's rather like digitalization and de-bureaucratization kind of processes. Mm-hmm. That's how I see it. Decreasing of corruption, but also work with investment. I really want people who can create something, who can build new factories, who can give work to other people, who can, you know, create goods or great services to be back to Ukraine and to be creative. I am so sick and tired of this destruction that Russia has brought to our land and to our peaceful cities. I really want to be back to my old topic and to help people to be creative, to create something, to, you know, to provide something and not to ruin and to steal like what Russians are doing.
I visited Kiev and Odessa in 2019 and I could really feel the vibe. You know, there was a lot of energy of startups and so on going on in Kiev in particular. I felt a bit like in Berlin. There was really a connection. So, I mean, from the outside, it seems like time is running a bit against the Ukraine, you know, just from the outside. So how long do you think this war will last? What is your perspective on that?
The thing is, it is connected to the assistance that we will receive from our Western allies in many ways. Of course, Ukraine has proven to be a nation of brave, of courage people who can, you know, keep on fighting whatever like happens, because we are fighting for our homes and for our families. But the thing is that, in my opinion, this war can be over quite soon if we receive enough of heavy weapon. And currently, I am ashamed to actually say that, for example, if we are talking about Germany, that we receive more tanks than actual assistance. And it's a shame that Germany, being the fourth biggest exporter of weapons, does not provide sufficient support to Ukraine. Germany, that used to be a leader of Europe, of European Union, there was no European Union without Germany, without, you know, also some German leadership. And nowadays we see that Germany, in a number of decisions that it could take, is reluctant. And we also see a big difference between what society think. German society being very supportive, like going for street actions and stuff like that, and what the government is doing. I think this is something that should be changed. And again, Germany produces a lot of weapon that could actually change the whole situation and the front lines, and can speed up the victory and basically speed up the peacemaking process in Europe. So if you provide a sufficient amount of MLRS or Leopards or Marauders, which we've discussed for now months, for over 2 months, actually the situation could be totally different. Thousands of Ukrainian civilians could survive and could live in a, you know, more or less peaceful circumstances. And nowadays, we don't see that. And this is a shame.
I'm sorry to hear your perspective. What do you think about the kind of the outlook? Peace is statistically much more likely to last when all parts of society are involved, including women. Do you see in the negotiations, are steps taken to include women?
Well, once again, I don't see, in my opinion, this is not the main challenge in the negotiation processes. Moreover, I should tell you that our negotiator are pretty much in the constant danger. You've probably heard that the last meeting, the negotiation, our negotiation team had in Belarus, 3 people were poisoned. Well, if you Google, you will definitely find that. 3 people, members of Ukrainian negotiation team, were poisoned. And then after that, the negotiation meeting have moved to Turkey. But we are rescuing our people by sending them to this negotiation. This is not, you know, unfortunately, when you deal with Russia, you are under constant danger. You probably remember a lot of cases when Russia is seeking for its own citizens abroad, trying to poison it, like in Great Britain or some European countries. So we are dealing with absolutely sick society whose only goal is to physically destroy the countries and kill as many people as they can. That's what they do in Ukraine. That's why we call it genocide, because their aim is to kill as many people as they can, as many Ukrainians as they can. And this is the issue. This is the challenge. Then going back to negotiation teams, once again, in my opinion, it's not the, you know, gender balance which is the main challenge. The main challenge is that Russians don't want any negotiations. So it doesn't matter who are you sending to these negotiations. If the guys on the other end of the table are saying that they want to destroy your country and to kill your people, they are saying, you know, absolutely stupid things. Like they want to so-called denazificate Ukraine. And they can't even explain what they mean by that. So in my opinion, these negotiations, like with these kind of demands that Russia is taking, makes little sense. That's why we understand that there is only one thing that can actually influence the negotiation process. And this is the situation on the front line. That's it. So we just have to fight back. And we really need more military assistance from Germany, but also from some Western allies. Great Britain and US are doing a great job. And we want, also it's funny, but some, you know, very tiny Eastern European countries are doing a great job by providing military assistance to Ukraine. Some tiny Eastern European countries gave away all the heavy weapons they had. So once again, what is the position and what are the activities of the leaders of European Union, like Germany, which have great military potential? That's an issue.
Yeah, it's an issue. So when looking at the war, I mean, you're also a sociologist, and I'm wondering, when we look back in 10 years, I mean, you know what they say, the first thing that gets lost in the war is the truth. When we look back in 10 years, what do you think people will think about the war?
I really don't know. This is a very hard question to ask, because we don't even know how many people will survive through this war to think anything about this war. I know, I see it from what children are talking, like the children that are my neighbors or children that are my like far relatives. These are small kids who are 5 years old. And when you're talking to them about, you know, just everyday routine, once in a while, they say something about Russians. And usually what they are saying is somehow connected to their security, physical security. So this is horrible. This is absolutely nonsense that 5 years old kids talking about daily routines should mention their physical security and mention Russian in this regard. These people will be teens 10 years from now. And it's a big question, what will be their physical and mental health 10 years from now?
And despite the delivery of weapons that you asked for, what can other countries do to support and to show solidarity?
Given that this decision of European Commission on EU membership of Ukraine is approaching, I would like to stress my attention on that topic. In my opinion, it's very important. Actually, it's vital to speed up the process of integrating Ukraine in the European Union. And I'm talking about full membership and not, you know, so-called new forms made up by Macron or some other, you know, or some other European guys. EU membership is vital for Ukraine. And it's not because, you know, it's fair or because it's our civilizational choice and stuff like that, although it's also very important. But EU membership for Ukraine is, first of all, about security, physical security. Because we see that Russia has turned into a hooligan who is, you know, wandering around the neighborhood and searching for some smaller or weaker persons, to bully them or to, you know, punch them or stuff like that. Russia, despite all the blackmailing that and all their stupid statements that they do, they have never attacked unions, neither political unions nor military unions, because they simply understand that they are not strong enough. So they only can, you know, can bully the smaller countries which are by themselves, which are not a part of any other unions. Let's recall Moldova with Transnistria caused by Russia and with Russian soldiers in Transnistria. Let's recall Georgia, which was attacked by Russia, then Ukraine, but also Syria. So they don't really attack the unions. And that's why, given the huge price that Ukraine has paid for its civilizational choice, the huge price that our society went through, I think that it is very important that Ukraine becomes a part of European Union, and it will secure Ukraine. It will provide this, you know, guarantees that Ukraine will not be attacked by Russia in the future, because this is also a big issue.
So, Halina, I want to thank you very much for your time and for your insight and for your voice. That is very important to hear. Thank you very much for this interview and your openness and your time.
Thank you very much for this interview.